on, and then with some of the issues with the home variable rate home mortgages that are going to come due here soon, the folks at the national level seem to think when that bill comes due, it's going to drive us into a recession, which we are just not immune from. I mean, we obviously have some benefits here that other cities do not have, and thus we continue to see our property values rise or at least not fall, but it's just inevitable that we're going to get hit, and I would hope that in this upcoming budget we anticipate that. And mm-hmm. I think that's your message.
Where is the growth in the – in what sectors are we seeing the greatest growth in the business license fee revenues?
I've never had any data by sectors, so I don't really know. My presumption would be financial services mm-hmm. and retail.
And the growth in the utility franchise fee is coming from?
In this forecast, principally from electric rate increases and telecom, miscellaneous telecom. Northwest Natural Gas is expected to be down slightly year over year because of the rate decrease that they just put through, and, of course, water and sewer are flat funded, so to speak.
And then what's the explanation of the transfer from 761 to 2.9 million?
Come again?
There's a, on your little recap here, it says that the difference, the forecast was $761,000.
Oh, the general fund has loaned, the school surcharge fund will have loaned by the end of this year $3 million to help with the timing of the business license surcharge monies not being able to pay the schools. Because of a cash flow problem, the way the taxes are collected and when the need to disperse the money occurs. So next year and the year after, they will pay the loan back to the general fund, and that's the increase. That's the bulk of that increase, right? It's all of the increase, essentially.
And we did, Mr. Mayor, Commissioner Adams, include in the bump ordinance that you previously adopted, there's $1.5 million to make that transfer this year from the general fund, that loan from the general fund to the business license surcharge fund. We're holding it in general fund contingency right now, but earmarked, and we plan to make the transfer at the end of the year.
And the health benefits increase of 7.3%, just remind me what the increase has been over the last couple of years.
I believe last year's and the year before were like in the 2-4% range. This year, the numbers through the first nine turnovers, so to speak, for that fund are essentially flat, showing little or no growth, maybe 2% or so. The consultant's forecast doesn't seem to reflect, at least for the near term, our actual experience. I would imagine that in March, after they've evaluated year-to-date expenditures out of the fund, if they stay pretty flat, that the 7.3% will come down. And it's likely that that will create a little more one-time money. Whether they decrease the rate of growth of expenditures in the out years, if that were to happen, it would put more ongoing money to the bottom line.
Thank you.
Drew, in terms of the cycle of boom and recession, how does Oregon and Portland do, and what is the timing? It seems like that we're always a little behind, either coming out of a recession, but I'm not sure about going into one. What's your recommendation?
Each recession that we've had in the last, say, since 1980 has been different. In the recession of the 1980s, when the economy was more resource-based, Oregon went into the recession first, stayed down longer, and came out later. Then in the early 90s, after we had this creation or development of this electronics cluster in the area, in that recession, the Oregon and the Portland area didn't feel the impact of it at all, hardly. It was simply a slowing of growth, but it never turned into a negative growth like you'd see in a recession. In the last recession, at the turn of the century, so to speak, we went in a little later and came out later. And my suspicion is that when we do get to this next downturn, since we are doing better now than a lot of regions in the country in terms of housing and employment growth, and not being so afflicted by the subprime mortgage problem as other areas are in metropolitan areas, that we would go in to some kind of a growth recession or a regular downturn later than the rest of the economy and probably come out a little bit later, having gone in later.
Are there financial strategies used by other cities or governmental entities where they can delay going into the recession through certain financial management strategies?
I'm not really familiar with what other cities do. I would say that the financial strategy that's most appropriate is to be careful about adding ongoing requirements to a budget. The second thing would be to be well reserved so that you could use reserves to some extent to kind of bridge yourself through a downturn. Now, as a downturn gets longer, something that's long, it's more difficult to make that work. So you get to the point where you simply have to cut. There really aren't any strategies that can do much but delay or help you get through a mild recession. A regular recession or a bad recession, no, there's not. I don't think there's a lot that can be done.
Thank you. Is there anyone who signed up to testify on this matter?
No one signed up.
Is there anyone here who wishes to testify to this matter? This report, I need a motion and a second.
So moved.
Second.
Please call the vote.
Adams?
Well, I think we will need to be very wise in making the right investments with this significant additional unforecasted resource. Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Stinn?
Aye.
Potter?
And concurring with Commissioner Adams, I think we do have to make some wise decisions, and I think some of the decisions we made this time in terms of focusing on existing programs is really important. In my letter to the commissioners, I stated also the importance I felt for ensuring that our public safety system, particularly communications, is efficient and effective in using the one-time resources to make sure that they're well on their way to becoming the tool that our public safety agencies need to do their job. So look forward to the budget sessions and a budget next year that reflects the priorities of our community. Vote aye.
Thank you.
Go to the regular agenda. Please read item 1442.
Approve recommendation to favor withdrawal, set boundaries, and fix time for final hearing on withdrawal of property from the City of Portland in case number WD-1-07, south of Southwest Garden Home Road and west of Southwest Oleson Road.
This is sort of a unique situation for Portland. We don't do a lot of de-annexation, but this happens to be one of them, even if it's a small one. And so it's caused us to look at a lot of different issues, and our staff is here to explain the process and the issues.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Bob Clay, Supervising Planner with the Bureau of Planning. With me this morning is Brian Sheehan, a planner also with the Bureau of Planning. I'm here because of my history with the Bureau and with this particular matter. And I want to make it clear that Brian has done all the work in terms of preparing the materials before you today and the ordinance. Last week, you adopted a resolution expressing the intent to proceed with withdrawal of five properties from Portland. And this would be in accordance with an earlier settlement agreement that was stipulated by Metro in 1996. So now it's almost 12 years later that we're proceeding with this action. The action then implements and finally resolves a longstanding dispute over an overlapping urban service boundary on our west side in the proximity of the Washington County, Multnomah County border. The ordinance before you would approve a recommendation to favor withdrawal of these five properties, to set boundaries and fix a time for a final hearing on withdrawal of the property from the City of Portland. I'm going to turn to Brian now to highlight a couple of points in the staff report. I did want to call out your attention that there is a communication from Mayor Rob Drake, Mayor of the City of Beaverton, from October 2nd of this year, making this request of us as well. We've been working very closely with Beaverton staff, actually for more than a year, to figure out how we can make this happen. I also understand that you'll have one person testifying, representing one or more of the property owners in a minute. So let me turn to Brian.
Thanks, Bob, and good morning, Mayor and members of council. It's a pleasure to be here this morning, although we were joking in the back that this isn't the type of action that typically gets a handshake and a medal at the front of the room. But be that as it may, it's an action that we've committed to take. And through the ordinance that was adopted by Metro, an agreement's been put in place, and as Bob mentioned, has been on the books for quite some time. So we're finally getting around to taking that action, and this is the second step in the process. The ordinance that's before you today does essentially three things and is necessary to reach the final hearing. The first is to declare your intent favoring the withdrawal, as difficult as that might be. But the second part of that is to establish the legal boundaries for the property to be withdrawn, and you'll notice in your packet that there is a legal description for the properties to be removed from the city. And then the third is to set the final hearing date, at which time we would establish an effective date for the properties to be withdrawn from the city. It's important to coordinate that effective date with the City of Beaverton and the other special district providers in the area so that there's no lapse in governance or services to the area. With that, we'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Questions? Well, I guess. So this is something that emanated from a Metro UGB decision? Okay.
It emanated from a decision by Portland, the City of Beaverton, and Washington County. We had a longstanding dispute over our mutual urban service boundary, and they needed to be coterminous. The boundaries were not coterminous. We had established a boundary that was further into Washington County. Beaverton had objected. Washington County had objected. We couldn't reach a mutual agreement, so we asked Metro to resolve the dispute on our behalf, so we were all signatories to that agreement. And as a result of that, Metro adopted an ordinance spelling out where that boundary should be. And in this particular instance, this is the only one in which there would actually be a withdrawal of properties. At the time, the property owners wanted to initiate their own annexation with the City of Beaverton. So that's why all of this time has expired during this period, is the property owners have been fine up until now, but now they would like to go ahead and proceed to annex to Beaverton. I think at least one of the properties has some redevelopment plans in mind, and that's spurring.
So there are no other areas currently between Beaverton and Portland and Washington County that are subject to de-annexation?
That's correct, right. That would be subject to withdrawal, correct.
This is the only one. Okay.
Now there were six properties. Five of the six have come forward with petitions to annex to Beaverton. The sixth property, the smallest of the properties, has asked to just remain with Portland. They're not interested at this time in annexing to Beaverton. There's been quite a bit of discussions back and forth about that, so we don't. It's at some point in the future they may come in and ask to go to Beaverton, but we're not anticipating anything in the near future.
Okay, thanks.
I would have suggested just duct taping the boundary and claiming it as ours, but that's fine. How are you?
Is there anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
Yes, we have one person, Peter F. Fry.
Thanks for being here. State your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
It's Peter Finley Fry, 2153 Southwest Main. I'm here representing Bob McCall, who owns three of the five properties, and two of them are commercial, one small triangle's residential, and we're trying to get all the property into a single zone, and we found out about this contract with between the city and Beaverton and felt that was a good opportunity to correct something and put it back together again. So we do support this de-annexation And I want to thank Planning Bureau staff, particularly Bob Clay, for helping us to get to this point. So thank you.
Thank you.
This will be the last one of these, Peter.
I was going to say that, though.
That's why I asked that question. Emergency call a vote.
Are we on 1442?
Yes.
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Mr. Fryer, we think you should donate your fee to a worthy cause this holiday season. Aye.
Well said. Substantial fee.
Potter?
Aye. Please, second reading on 1443. Call the vote. Go ahead and read it.
Authorized changes to the Human Resources Administrative Rules and to the definition of classifications exempt from the classified service to implement charter reform approved by the voters on May 15th, 2007.
Second reading, call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 1444.
Modify the professional, technical, and expert policy documents to address minority, women, and emerging small business subcontractor concerns, and to require public notice to the city intent to execute sole source PTE contracts.
Good morning, Mayor Potter, members of City Council. I'm Jeff Baer with the Bureau of Purchases. And a while back, you heard some concerns related to how larger dollar professional service contracts contractors may use minority, women, and emerging small business subcontractors to obtain these city contracts and only later to decide not to use those subconsultants once the work begins. And after reviewing where this might be taking place internally, the resolution before you today highlights a number of areas that we want to change, and we believe this will tighten up and prevent this from happening on city PTE contracts. And Commissioner Leonard, you'd asked that I bring this back in the form of resolution, which is showing here today. And I think just to highlight a couple of the primary changes, one of which is to, if a firm in their proposal indicates that they intend to use a MWESB subconsultant to perform the work, they actually do that. And we are also asking that bureaus in the contracts that exceed $100,000, which you approve by way of ordinance, that they indicate the percent of subcontractor utilization in the ordinance itself, so you can see easily the percentage of the contract value that is awarded to a minority, woman, or emerging small business. Thirdly, the last change is the requirement to notify or publicize our notice of intent for sole source contracts above the formal limit, which is at $22,394 up to $100,000. And that's really our formal range, and I didn't put the recommendation to go above $100,000 because those come before you as ordinance, and I thought that would just suffice for the public notification as well. So with that, I'll stop. I do need to make one minor amendment, and that is to add a last now therefore be it further resolved, and that this resolution is binding city policy, so we incorporate it into the city policy document.
I hear a motion.
I'll make that amendment.
Second.
Call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye.
If you have any questions, glad to address those.
I have some questions, particularly about the sole sourcing change. So any contract between 22,000 and 100,000, if it's a sole source, would now have to be published first on your website.
Correct.
The idea being if someone else thinks they can provide the services, they can then come to you and say what?
The way it works, and actually this aligns with our goods and services contracts and our construction contracts for sole source, that we actually publicize the notice of intent to award to a sole source. And if somebody out there wants to challenge our findings on it, they send us a letter saying, I can do that same service. And then we would work with the Bureau to determine if indeed it really is something that could be competitively solicited or not, and go back to the justification of that.
So if someone does come forward, then there is a process for
correct
responding.
Yes.
And that's through your office.
Our office. To, yeah. Yep.
And I guess my other question is, I'm still trying to figure this out. If a sole source between $22,000 and $100,000 is amended, so suppose it's $25,000 and then it's amended.
Our current rules.
Can it be amended three times and as a sole source?
You could. It would fall into our contract amendment limitations, which is at 25% of the original contract value. So in the case of a $25,000 sole source contract, if the Bureau wanted to execute an amendment above 25%, they have to come before you as an ordinance to approve that. And with your case, I think your bureaus are at 10% to get your approval.
And then my final question is, if under a sole source scenario, scope of work changes. So suppose it's a $25,000 sole source, nobody contests it, and then it's re-upped for, I guess, how much could it be re-upped for?
25% of the original contract value. So you could, I suppose, amend it to add to the scope of work, if that's what you're talking about.
But only for?
Up to 25% without having to come back with an ordinance.
Okay, thank you. Good work, by the way, on all of this.
Yes. Is anybody signed up to testify on this matter?
I did not have a sign-up sheet.
Is there anyone here who wishes to testify to this matter? Please call the vote.
Adams?
Good work, Jeff.
Aye.
Leonard?
I really do appreciate you focusing on this and correcting the loopholes to make sure that we're doing what we intend to do. Thanks, Jeff, very much. Aye.
Saltzman.
Yes, I also want to thank you. This is really responsive, I think, to concerns that were raised about MWESB subcontractors and whether they actually get the work that they're represented as getting when we select people. And I also appreciate the new rule about the sole source contract notifications. Aye.
Stan?
Well, Jeff, I think you're doing a great job. This is, I think, probably the area of city spending that is the most often thankless, so thanks. And also, you know, over the course of time, over the course of, say, a decade, really will change the city the most in terms of making sure small businesses have access. And it's not just access. It's making sure that the citizens of Portland get the talents that are out there that maybe don't always survive what are, you know, pretty tough, stringent contracting rules and things that don't always favor the upstarts. So I think this is really going to make a big difference. And it's one of these things, having been around for a little while, where it's very easy, and I've done it myself, to give a speech about how we need to make these rules work better. It's very difficult to actually make them work better. And I think you and your team are really doing that. So thanks, I.
Potter.
Yes, I want to convey my thanks to you, Jeff. Also to Bruce. Thank you for bringing in this our attention, and sticking with it. We appreciate that. So thanks, folks. Vote aye. Please read item 1445.
Vacate a portion of Southwest Gaines Street between Southwest 15th and 16th Avenues, subject to certain conditions and reservations.
Commissioner Adams.
Coming up. As required by state law, we have to bring these items forward on the regular agenda for council consideration. Do you want to give us 13 seconds on what this is about?
13. Good morning, Mr. Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Joe Baybato. I'm with the Office of Transportation and Right-of-Way Acquisitions Group, and I'm currently responsible for processing street vacations. I'm sitting in for another agent that has this project. Basically, this is a piece of road that's adjacent to a city park that's unimproved, and the adjacent petitioner is asking for the vacation so they can add it and replace an old home.
Thank you.
All right.
Is there anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
No one signed up.
Is there anyone here who wishes to testify to this matter? It's a non-emergency and moves to a second reading. Please read the next item.
1446, vacate a portion of Northwest 9th Avenue, north of Northwest Overton Street, subject to certain conditions and reservations.
Good morning.
I'm Dee Walker. Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. I am also with the Office of Transportation Right-of-Way Acquisition Section. Hoyt Street Properties is the petitioner for this street vacation on a segment of Northwest 9th, just north of Overton. And it is they are not here, so I'm just going to go ahead and let you know what this is about. It's currently unused right-of-way, and the development site is owned by Hoyt Street, and the intent of this vacation is to incorporate the requested area into the landscape plan and create a space that serves as an entryway into the Pearl District from Northwest NATO Parkway, and to provide pedestrian improvements to enhance the connection between the Pearl District and future improvements. If you can look on the very first diagram, you'll see that the improvements would be to the right of it. The second page is the site plan. That pretty much shows, in relation to where the building will be, the area of right-of-way that's needed for this improvement. The third attachment is where it is in relation to the street. It's not exactly that triangular. The second sheet of the site plan shows the street vacation more accurately. The neighborhood associations were notified of the street vacation. Neither of them had an objection. Planning Commission meeting was held August 28th recommending approval of the vacation.
So it's a vacation for the purpose of public space?
Yeah, it's going to be mostly for pedestrian access.
Sorry, Commissioner.
Oh, no, I think that's great. And I don't suspect we'd need to with Hoyt Street, but having been burnt by that building over by Lloyd Center, is there stipulation in here that they can't fence this off?
You know, there isn't anything that says they can't, but there are easements overlaying the portion of the street vacation. There's sewer easements, general utility easements, and those cannot be fenced off. So there wasn't anything in the ordinance specific that it...
I'm just thinking, you know, you get to a land gets scarcer and scarcer, and you get 30 years down the road, and the condo, so Tiffany's long gone from this project, and the condo association decides they want a yard instead of a public...
Well, there are easements overlaying the portion. There's a huge sewer easement that takes up the majority of the vacated area because BES, that's one of the conditions of the ordinance of the vacation, is that there has to be a sewer easement because there is a pipe there. So that will need to be...
But can't you fence off an easement and allow egress upon request? I mean, I don't think that's...
You can. Yeah, so. Technically. But we would have to be able to have access to it. But if this is for pedestrian connection and pedestrian way, it is, I guess you could go back to what is the intent of public pedestrian way and connection it would need to be.
Well, I'll trust the department. I just don't see any reason we wouldn't have a sentence that says you can't fence this off if we're giving it away. Because, you know, I'm just thinking of the building that connects between Benson High School and Lloyd Center where they fenced it off. And when we approved that development, there was an understanding, at least by me and I think others, that they were not allowed to fence that off. And it's turned out after they fenced it off that we aren't able to enforce that. And it's a terrible... Yeah, I don't know if everyone knows what I'm thinking about, but it's
a new building, yeah.
Yeah.
Is there any reason we can't put a sentence in?
No, I can definitely revise.
It's not completely analogous, but I could see a neighbor wanting the space for their own building. And the other one I think a lot about, and it's my dear friend that I worked with up there, but I thought we were going to have a very different arrangement on the Presbyterian Church courtyard up on 11th downtown than what's there now. It's a beautiful courtyard, but the public's not allowed in, and that was not what I thought was going to happen. So I've seen a history of where, you know, people like their own space.
Where would you suggest we add the sentence that this may not be fenced off, limiting public? What would you say? Limiting public
access? Under Section B, it has granted subject to the following conditions and reservations, and perhaps put it in around after two or three.
Okay. So...
Okay, yeah, I can definitely do that.
Could you create one now so we can...
Can you tell us what the sentence would read?
Well, I would have to go back. We probably have general language that we would have to use that...
If you could give us your best language now, that would be great.
Okay. I would just say that... let's see, where are we going to...
That's the
in between
building.
Two and three.
When did that happen? Can we just say that the conditions and reservations is that this parcel may not be fenced?
Yeah, just it should probably go under.
Well, they may do something. How about just shall be open to for public access?
It should be for perpetual use by the public, is kind of the, you know, some of the language that we use.
Do you want to move that amendment?
Sure, I'd move that language as you stated it.
So you want it put in between, I'm sorry, number 2 and 3?
Yes.
On page 2?
And what would it say exactly?
Exactly off the tip of my tongue, something to the effect that said parcel as described in exhibit. Exhibit 1A and depicted on 1B shall remain open and is for perpetual use by the public.
Okay. Yes.
Second.
Thank you.
Call the vote.
Oh, this is a first reading, I believe.
Right. We're voting on the amendment.
Oh, got it. Thanks.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard? Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Thanks, Commissioner, for pointing that out. Vote aye.
Yep. Just one more question. Actually, it's kind of a generic question.
Sure.
It was more related to the last vacation, but do we get consideration when we vacate a street for somebody to
Well, we get cost recovery. Is that what you're talking about? Consideration, compensation? Is that what you're talking about?
I guess I'm talking about do we get paid?
We do not charge. There's not like a market value. We don't have the property appraised. Right now, it's under a cost recovery. Different cities do it differently. We have figured out what our average cost for all the departments, and right now it's about $3,000, so we charge an upfront $3,000 fee. If it goes past that for administrative time, if we run into things that we just didn't really anticipate, then we actually bill the petitioner, and they have to pay the balance of that.
We actually,
just
we
the
actually,
cost of processing
we actually. Litigation. We actually don't own the streets in the city of Portland.
Right.
We simply have an easement to use that property for streets and roads.
Because we don't buy our streets in fee, they're just dedicated, and we encumber it.
But do they own it at the end of this process?
Well, yes. Oh, at the end of the process?
The vacation process.
Because what we're doing is vacating the public's interest, and so, yes, the reversionary right is going back to the property owner.
They didn't own it before we did that.
Well, we didn't own it. The property owner always owns the underlying fee. So if you consider like your bundle of rights, every stick in the bundle is one interest. They own 100% interest. When we get that street, we don't get it in fee. So we take every stick in the bundle but one, which is the reversionary right. So someday, if we don't need it, it reverts back to the property owner. Unlike ODOT, when they buy their streets completely in fee, they own every stick in the bundle. The city of Portland does not. So that's why we're vacating the public's interest in it. We no longer need it.
But was this particular property associated with the legal description of the property Hoyt's building on?
The legal description.
I mean, how do you know that? How do you assign?
Because the county, the county is the one that determines where the property reverts back to. The city does not do that.
And they determined that it reverted back to this particular case?
Yes. And that is done up front before it ever gets this far. At the petition stage, they actually make a call to the county, and the county is the one to tell them, yes, the property is yours, or no, I'm sorry, it's not. It's your neighbor's across the street, and you'll have to work out a deal with him. So that's determined at the county level, not us.
And generally speaking, like in a normal standard residential street, if we were to vacate a street, half of the street.
Typically, never to tell property owners that when they call, because then they take it as gospel. Typically, a street will be divided in half, and when it was created, half came from property owner on one side, half came from property owner on the other side. But I have seen, since I've been here, I've seen the whole street come from one complete side. So we always stay away from that topic, and we just tell them that it's not up to us to determine where it reverts back to. They have to call the county for that.
Thanks. I've learned something today.
I was surprised when I learned this.
I'm impressed that you know that.
Thanks, folks.
Thank you.
Well, I was ready to start selling things and make money. There's nothing to sell.
So now I can tell people we don't own the streets.
We don't own the streets. Just the responsibility of maintaining them.
But we would own a street maintenance improvement fee, right?
That's right.
Is there a sign-up sheet for this?
There was. No one signed up.
Is there anyone here who wishes to testify to this matter? This is a non-emergency, moves to a second reading. Please read item 1447.
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement with the Tri-County Metropolitan Transportation District to provide for enhanced security and cleaning during construction of light rail facilities on 5th and 6th Avenues for calendar year 2008.
Second reading, call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Let's read item 1448.
Consent to transfer of Hoffman Sanitary Residential Solid Waste and Recycling Collection franchise to Wacker Sanitary Service.
Mr. Salzman?
This is simply a transfer of a residential franchise from Hoffman to Wacker.
Is there anyone here who has signed up to testify on this matter?
I didn't have a sign-up sheet.
Anyone wish to testify to this matter? It's a non-emergency and moves to a second reading. Please read item 1449.
Authorized contract with Hargreaves Associates to provide planning, design, and construction administration services for improvements to South Waterfront Neighborhood Park.
Mr. Salzman.
Thank you, Mayor. This is an important first step towards fulfilling the city's commitment of constructing a neighborhood park in the South Waterfront Central District. It's important to get this work started immediately, and thus this item is an emergency. If there are any questions, we have Sandra Bertzos, the project manager from Parks, who is available for questions.
Questions from the commissioners? Is there anyone here who signed up to testify?
No one signed up.
Anyone here who wished to testify to this matter? It's an emergency vote. Please call.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 1450.
Assess property for sidewalk repair by the Bureau of Maintenance.
Second reading, call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Recessed until 2 p.m.